Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Starcast, the German football pod, brought to you by The Athletic. Today, Hansi Flick thought the announcement of his departure would be the biggest story of the weekend, but no! VfL Bochum edge a 7-goal thriller in Bundesliga 2. We'll bring you all the details of that, as well as the full fallout from events in Munich, the latest on the changes at Eintracht Frankfurt, Hertha being in COVID quarantine, and Dortmund making a late push for the Champions League. Oh, and there's a Super League business as well. All of that in Stahlcast. Hello, dear listener, and hello to an elated Christoph Biermann for reasons that will become clear in due course. Before we get going, though, a quick reminder that The Athletic's fine written content is available for just £3.99 a month for 6 months at the moment. Go to theathletic.com/StahlcastPod to sign up schnell. Christoph, there's only one way to start, and only one place, I should say, and that's with VfL Bochum, of course. They had a huge win at the weekend to put themselves in a great position to go up to the Super League. I mean, the German Super League, which is the Bundesliga, next year. Tell us a little bit about your great Bochum win.
Yeah, so they were playing Hanover, being 1-0 down after 20 minutes or so, and playing some desperate football at that time, then managed to turn it around, being at 3-1. And then they got the equalizer in the last minute of the game, so the 90th minute of the game, and scored the winner in extra time after a corner. And so that was my personal highlight of the weekend. But I think a lot of people would say there were also some minor other highlights in the German Bundesliga and in German football and in international football and in world football. And Yeah,
highlights or lowlights, I mean, depending on where you stand on this. We will talk about the Super League proposals a little bit later. But before that particular bomb went off, Hansi Flick thought that he had the biggest story of the weekend. He told TV cameras live after the 3-2 win at Wolfsburg from Bayern that he was going to step down, or that he had told the board that he was looking to be released from his contract, to be a bit more precise. He had told his players briefly before, and he went public at a time when the board members, perhaps significantly, were already on the way back on a plane, not able to react. And a very strong-worded statement came out from Bayern the next day, saying they disapprove of Flick's way of communicating this, that there had an agreement, that there had been an agreement to keep this in-house and under wraps until the game against Mainz, which is next Saturday. There's a Leverkusen game in between as well on Tuesday. But Flick felt, for whatever reason, he could no longer keep quiet. And now the cat is out of the bag. Christoph, what do you make of all of this from the outside looking in?
I think it's an interesting example of a massive failure at Bayern. I mean, we have been discussing this conflict between Flick and Salihamidžić for weeks and weeks and weeks. But that they weren't able to properly solve it. And I think there would have been a big chance to keep Hansi Flick, although the German FA is interested, although the Germany job would be a huge temptation for him. I think there would have been a chance to keep him. But obviously, over the weeks and probably more months, so many things have been going wrong. And my main impression is that this aspect of the how Bayern is run as a club, that the coach is not as important as he is in other clubs, has fired back to some extent here. And I think maybe that Bayern has to rethink how they treat their manager, their coaches, and how to establish a collaboration that is more in tune with football and the 21st century.
It's interesting that you should say that. I mean, I would always say in purely structural terms that Bayern's way of doing transfer business, I don't want to say disregarding, but sort of kindly ignoring coaches' wishes, is actually the better way to run the club, generally speaking, because coaches don't tend to stick around. And then you end up buying players that you don't want, and Bayern have made that experience themselves. However, what I do agree with you is that I think as much as you want to talk about structures and hierarchies and who's responsible for what, football ultimately is a people business. And it's not enough to say from Bayern, you the coach, you just coach, you know, forget about all your ideas and, you know, that we don't care. And also the other way around, I think it's not enough for a coach, or it's perhaps not genuine for a coach to say, I want to keep all players, I want to sign these players, I want to do, you know, these things with disregard to financial situations or other considerations that the club have. What's happened in previous times, and there was a very good article in Süddeutsche Zeitung going back to the Van Gaal years, which was quite funny, was that Bayern have always allowed coaches that they believe in to make one or two signings just to keep them happy and to give them the sense that they are part of the structure, part of the conversation. With Van Gaal, this delivered players like Braithwaite and Pranjic. And the immortal line when Uli Hoeneß supposedly asked, who are these players? Van Gaal said, well, they're Van Gaal players.
I can add to this from the Borussia Dortmund perspective. So there was a time when, I think even at Borussia Dortmund, when Jürgen Klopp was there, he was not in charge of the signings at the clubs. And there were also Jürgen Klopp players like Julian Schieber or Oliver Kirch and others. And yeah, it's right. It's right that coaches shouldn't be fully in charge of the transfer dealings of the club, because that's absurd, because most of their energy has been taken by their team, they actually team preparation of matches, man management, and so on and so on. But I think you have to establish a conversation about transfers and a mutual trust that makes it possible that things are working smoothly. And I think we could go in an extended discussion how good the transfer dealings of Hasan Salihamidžić were. I think altogether they're rather underwhelming for a club of the size of Bayern. If you're a coach, then I think we have been talking about the question of trust already last week, and I think it was more maybe not so much a personal thing or so, but the question is, this guy delivering players that help me, that help us, that help the club? And I think that Flick, to an extent, rightly said no.
Yeah, I do think there's a personal dimension between those two as well. I don't think they were ever able to transform disagreements into a debate on a professional level. I think it got personal very, very quickly. You recall that Hansi Flick, even as early as the winter training camp in Qatar, when he'd just been in the job as interim coach for a couple of months, he went public saying, I need a right back, because he felt he wasn't being listened to. And I think he wasn't being listened to because Bayern at that moment felt, well, he's the interim coach. You know, why should we listen to the interim coach? And I think he took that very personally. And I think their relationship never really, really recovered. And when he was, of course, installed as head coach in July, he won the Champions League and then perhaps felt emboldened to be even more vocal about his ideas. And again, I think there was an inability to channel that into productive discussion.
Yeah, but here comes the point. I mean, if you see as the boss of a company, and in that respect, Bayern is also a company, you see that your two most important leaders in the company, they don't agree or don't get along well with each other. You have to intervene properly. And they didn't do it. I mean, or they tried it and didn't manage it, but they let this problem simmer on for a long time. And now it's the whole thing is over.
And that's exactly the point, Christoph. I completely agree. This is a failure of leadership, not just between those two, but the guys above them. And I think it tells you also the story of where Bayern are at the moment. They are, as far as the leadership is concerned, in transition. And transition can be something that is positive, that can create momentum, or it can be very static and almost people feel paralyzed because they're not quite gone or they're not quite there. And I think in this particular case, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, who tried to intervene, who was the backer of Hansi Flick, I think found himself increasingly isolated at the rest of the club. There is a sense that he is soon gone, so his power is waning. Uli Hoeneß is in the background, trying to get involved. And the two new people who should be in charge, Herbert Heine, the president, and Oliver Kahn, the future chief executive, the successor of Rummenigge, were either unable or unwilling to get their hands really dirty. And I think that is the bottom line. And now, of course, they find themselves in a situation where the club have been damaged. The relationship between the players and the club, I think, to an extent is damaged because there are very big voices in the dressing room who think that this is not the way things should go, that the most successful coach in recent history is basically feeling that he needs to leave. They wanted him to stay, by and large. And even the new leadership, to a certain extent, are damaged, I think, by this affair. The one thing or the one person that can now save them, apart from other issues taking over and being more important, is, I think, if they can produce Julian Nagelsmann as a successor. If Salihamidžić, as the sporting director, says, okay, yeah, I mean, Flick, it didn't work out, but here is Julian, you know, the sexiest coach in German or maybe in European football, then the dynamic will be a different one. If, however, Bayern fail to pull that off, and there are pretty strong indications that Leipzig will be very, very resistant to this idea, then I think we will see a bigger fallout of this affair, and then maybe Hasan Salihamidžić himself, I think, might be under pressure. If you want to read more about this, the ins and outs, I wrote an article on The Athletic, which should be up by the time you listen to this. But before we move on, Christoph, let me ask you this. With Julian, do you feel that this is something that Bayern will be able to do, or will Leipzig draw a line in the sand and say, forget it, guys?
I think it very much depends on Nagelsmann himself. I found it interesting that he was so defensive about it so far. Interesting sign. So he didn't open the door until now. He was just saying, yeah, they haven't contacted me, blah, blah, blah. And I'm here at Leipzig. I mean, the usual stuff, but if you try to read between the lines, it was not, I say the normal stuff, but hey guys, I'm desperate to go to Bayern.
But maybe it's not necessary because he has said all that stuff before. He'd said, you know, I can see myself coaching in Munich one day, my family lived there, he's been wearing this red coat.
the famous coded red coat.
Message, come and get me coat. And I think Bayern are aware that he would like to do the job. But as you said, he's been towing the company line. And he also said he's not going to start a war. The question is, can Bayern get him without starting a war? Or will they have to look elsewhere? That's going to be really, really interesting.
I think it very much depends on Mateschitz, the kind of owner of RB Leipzig. I think there are he is good friends with the leaders at Bayern, but whatever until that now. Means until now, maybe he said, "Hey, my friends, this time not," or whatever. But interesting weeks to come concerning this matter, because I agree with you. I think it would be very important for Bayern to pull him out of the head as the successor of Hansi Flick, because then I think he would also be accepted as a very interesting coach by the team, by the fans, and the fans. I mean to have a word on them. I think many Bayern fans are frustrated about the situation, about the whole situation. And I think also because most of the Bayern supporters think that Hansi Flick, in a way, personalized the idea of the Bayern family, of somebody who is deeply a Bayern man, who is, and he is not Louis van Gaal or Pep Guardiola, who were in a way above the club. He gives the impression to be very much the club, and I think a lot of supporters feel that. And so I think these days there is a lot of frustration about the whole affair.
Well, absolutely. And before we do actually move on, one thing that was interesting was that because of his way of communicating this by himself and the board closing ranks against it, I wonder if perhaps perception will just change a little bit, because he, in that moment at least, didn't reveal himself as a company man. He probably felt he had to come clean at that point and clear his conscience. He was allowed, or he was able to do so, because Bayern won, as we said. Leipzig only drew the night before, which leaves Bayern 7 points clear. And I think that was probably the moment where Flick felt it's safe to do now without jeopardizing Bayern's title chances. And of course, with five games to go, it's going to be very difficult for them to throw this away. However, the race for the top four is hotting up a little bit. Wolfsburg, of course, lost, as we mentioned, but more importantly, Frankfurt were also beaten quite heavily in the sort of game that has been kind of symptomatic of the league this year. so I need to just take a second to get this right. So Gladbach's future coach was beaten by Borussia Dortmund's future coach. And Dortmund were the winners, in a way, of course, because they also won against Bremen quite convincingly. And now the difference between Dortmund and Frankfurt is just 4 points, and Wolfsburg, it's 5. So Dortmund sensing that the door back into the Champions League might still be a little bit open. Let's talk Frankfurt, because it feels like 100 years ago, but Adi Hütter was actually confirmed as leaving at the end of the season to Gladbach. We had Freddy Bobic also being confirmed as the new Hertha sporting director after Frankfurt allowed him to rescind his contract. So the two big personalities in Frankfurt in recent years are leaving. And Frankfurt tried to sign somebody else, or at least had talks with somebody in Ralf Rangnick, which also sort of blew up, and lots of recriminations of who was at fault and who said what. So first of all, Frankfurt, do you sense, Christoph, that with all this going on, they could actually run out of steam a little bit?
Yeah, I do. We were wondering last week what might be the idea of Adi Hütter to leave Frankfurt on their way to the Champions League to Gladbach, surely not in the Champions League, only probably in the Europa League or Conference League or whatever next season. And what I've heard, so what Hütter was feeling, he had the impression with Bruno Hübner, the team manager, and especially Freddy Bobic leaving, that the whole situation wouldn't be as good for him as it was until now. Or until then. And he is a man, he's very clear as a coach, but he also needs a certain atmosphere to properly work. So that, for example, was one of the reasons why he left RB Salzburg, because he had the impression that he was too much controlled in the way how to play football by Ralf Rangnick there. And so also with hearing who the guys that could replace Freddy Bobic could be, he wasn't convinced that he would like to work with them. I mean, Ralf Rangnick again was one of the candidates. Maybe he was shocked to hear that. so that was his thinking behind it, and he had the feeling that he would find a better, for him, more suitable, better atmosphere to work at Mönchengladbach. And I think now there at Frankfurt is a kind of emotional void or vacuum with, as you said, Bobic leaving, Bruno Hübner going into retirement, Adi Hütter leaving. So everybody now is a bit in limbo. The players, for example, who will be my new boss? If my contract runs out, who will I have to talk to, or my agents have to talk to, and so on. Maybe it was one of these days, this 4-0 defeat at Mönchengladbach. But there is a feeling creeping in that, as you say, Frankfurt might get out of steam on the last days of the season.
There's another possible explanation, or perhaps it's another aspect of the explanation, to think that maybe Hütter is aware that the team is going to be significantly worse next year. Luka Jovic is likely to go back. I don't think Frankfurt are in a position to extend the loan or even buy him. That's probably impossible. Andre Silva has been scoring all these goals. Whether it's a release clause or some kind of agreement, there is a strong suggestion that he can leave for a certain amount of money that is probably going to be pretty affordable, even in COVID times. And there is at least a suggestion also that Kostic, who's made very little secret that he wants to also eventually move on, will have one opportunity or one way or another to get that release as well. So maybe Hütter realized that, you know, having overperformed now in the second out of 3 years there, it's going to be very, very difficult to keep this up, even in the Champions League, even with the money. If Eintracht Frankfurt's financial situation is perhaps not quite as rosy as it looks from the outside, all sorts of difficulties, and maybe a fresh start at Gladbach is the right way forward. So it's going to be really interesting.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. you can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Dortmund, I think we have to talk about as well before we turn our attention to the political sphere. A good win for them. Erling Haaland among the goals once again after his drought of 7 games. And a realistic chance, as we said, of making top four. How do you evaluate their season, Christoph, especially in relation to the Champions League performances against City, which I think certainly the first leg, but even bits of the second leg, kind of surprised us in a positive sense?
I think it has given them a big boost because they saw what they are able to do on the pitch. I mean, the whole season is a bit of a roller coaster drive, and we have been trying to predict how things are going on, only to find out that we were caught out wrong again. but now I think where you can see the end of the season, I think they might be able to concentrate for the last 5 matches and keep the level of performance that they were showing in the last 2 weeks. And again, yes, Manchester City was the superior team, obviously, but Borussia Dortmund gave them a lot of headaches and gave them a lot to obstacles to overcome. And I was really, really impressed how they did it, how they were also by Terzic, how he managed it tactic wise. So that was also a performance, I think, that helped him to be seen as one of the top young coaches in Germany, one of the next top young coaches from Germany. So it still will be difficult to close this 4-point gap, but now it's not impossible anymore.
Well, I completely agree with you on Terzic, a hugely impressive figure, also in terms of his dealings with the media, very concise, very interesting, very engaging, very charismatic. You know, for someone who's never been in this position before, you couldn't help but be impressed with him. And I can see why players would respond to him, even though he doesn't have the wealth of experience or the big name, because he's just a guy who comes across as very genuine and as interesting. So
recently I had the chance to meet him for a story in El Freunde that comes out this week. And the impression face to face talking to him was very much the same. He is a very interesting to talk to guy. He is very likable. He has something boyish about him on the one side. On the other side, he is he seems to be mature how he talks about football. He has interesting experiences working with Slaven Bilic in Istanbul, and especially inspired by his time in the at West Ham in the Premier League, especially meeting all the top coaches from the Premier League after matches. I didn't know that. I mean, I knew that they coaches were sitting together and have a glass of wine, but obviously the whole affair is bigger. So also the assistants come in and there is a lot of exchange, and he picked up many ideas from there. And he was telling interesting stuff about it. And I must say I was impressed by him as a person, but also in a professional sense.
Yeah, and he will, of course, be an assistant to Marco Rose next season when Rose takes over. Rose might still leave in more positive terms, because that win from Gladbach puts them within contention of reaching a European place. They're now in 7th, 43 points, just ahead of surprise package Union. And
They don't give up.
But they're still in it after beating Stuttgart, their rivals for the surprise package, Monica, and indeed their rivals for European place, 2-1. The other important result at the bottom was Köln losing one of the derbies there against Leverkusen 3-0. That puts Leverkusen in sixth and Köln into 17th. Köln now managed under by Friedhelm Funkel on his, I don't know, his 12th assignment or something in the Bundesliga. It feels like that. He is the Big Sam of the Bundesliga. He's the guy you call when you don't want to get relegated, but you sense at the moment that that call might have been a little bit too late. And we should also mention that Funkel came very close to saying some really stupid stuff on German television, which was, very revealing, but not in a good way. The less, I guess, said about that, the better. Schalke, well, no surprise that they are still in 18th. They lost again to Freiburg. They're now on 13 points and could well be the worst team ever. Bielefeld, though, with a bit of a lifeline, they're in 15th, 27 points after their 0-0 draw against Augsburg. And Hertha. Hertha we have to talk about, because Hertha, as you recall, Christoph, and you, dear listener, very much blew up, or nearly blew up, the Bundesliga restart protocol when Salomon Kalou live streamed a COVID test from one of his teammates and high-fived everyone in the dressing room, and there was a huge fallout. He was suspended. Hertha were told off, and now they've done it again, but worse in a way, because there's a huge outbreak. An assistant coach,
Dode Lukebakio,
Paul Dardai,
and Marvin Plattenhardt.
Have all tested positive for COVID. The whole team has been put in quarantine, and the next few games have been called off, including that key game against Mainz, which was supposed to happen on Sunday. Because of jokes about Hertha aside, and there's always a good reason to have a bit of a laugh about Hertha, is there a danger that the league will not finish on time?
Not up to now, because now the games that Hertha have to play are still fit into the schedule. There is an even more chaotic situation in the second division right now, with three teams in quarantine already. And I wouldn't blame Hertha too much. I mean, you mentioned this Kalou story that was utterly crazy. But this, what happened, I think it's very unfortunate, because in a way it can happen to everybody, to every team, because, I mean, the numbers are rising still in Germany. If you have kids it can happen. So maybe the Bundesliga would be well advised, what they have been thinking about, to maybe towards the end of the season, to go into some kind of quarantine bubble, not to miss the end of the season with some matches remaining or whatever, because after the end of the season, already 5 minutes later, the European Championship is going to start. So there is not much room to navigate. But for Hertha, I mean, it's a terrible situation. Actually, I mean, I've always held up the flag of the "In Pal we trust," and they too good to go down, and blah blah blah, and they have the opponents still to play where they can get the points. But if you have to do this in a what we call a constant English Woche, so with three games in a week, it is diminishing your chances. I mean, not terribly, but it's diminishing them. And as we all know, it's a very narrow situation. So things are now really serious for Hertha. Mm. really serious.
There's also a danger, of course, of the integrity of the competition being affected if, you know, some teams are playing at different times than others late on in the season when you might know what result might work for you. But just to finish on a serious note, and perhaps I was being a little bit too flippant, there was also a case within the Hertha cases of Rune Jahrstein, who's been actually suffering from COVID to the extent that he even had treatment in hospital, Arne Friedrich revealed. So it's not that funny. And even for a professional footballer, it can be a very serious and debilitating illness. We wish him all the best, of course. But Christoph, before we leave, what's going on? What's going on? I never thought I'd see this day. I always thought this was going to be the nuclear button that would never be pushed. But it was pushed late on Sunday night. 12 big clubs, or clubs who want to feel as if they're big clubs, joined a new Super League, the Super League, and have voiced their intention to effectively break away from international organized club football by UEFA and do it themselves in a system that will keep open 5 out of the 15 places to other clubs that might or might not qualify, but basically blows up European football and maybe domestic football as we know it. Now, the German clubs have so far stood idly by. We haven't heard anything from Bayern or Dortmund, to the two clubs we believe have been in discussion. Will that change? Will the Bundesliga hold together? Or will that line break? And will the two big guys from Bayern and Dortmund say, you know what, we don't like it, but it's not something that we can miss out on?
May I ask you something back? Because I'm wondering if that what you call the nuclear bottom is, or hitting the nuclear bottom, is what they have been for 25 years now. In different fashion, in different versions, every time they want something from UEFA, if they want something from the other clubs, this time a new format of the Champions League that has been criticized already by a lot of fans and the public and so on, and now say, in a way, okay, we do this and to have something to bargain for. So, okay, we step back from this, then you accept this next Champions League reform. What I don't know. That was my first thought. Maybe it's wrong.
I think this is different and this is worse, because this is no longer just their finger hovering above the button and say, I will press this, I will press this, don't make me do this, don't make me do this. They've actually done it. They've done it and they've taken concrete steps, legal steps, to try and prevent UEFA and FIFA from going against them. You know, there's a structure in place. Florentino Perez is the new chairman. I'm sure there's some kind of broadcasting deal in place. There's certainly the financing that's in place. So this is a lot more concrete than saying, we will do this. And the irony is that the new Champions League reform had really been agreed. I mean, there were still some points open to debate about how the money would be distributed and the exact access list, but it basically had gone through. So there was no need to go all the way just to force through a reform that UEFA believed was a decent enough compromise. This goes much further. And it's a case of brinkmanship, because the clubs believe that ultimately, what they can provide is such a compelling product that whatever FIFA, UEFA, and the domestic league say, they will not be able to stop them. I'm not so sure. And of course, the German clubs are key here, because if they resist and Germany as a market, as a TV market, does not come into play for this new Super League, then there would be a serious blow. I spoke to someone from fairly high up from a German club last night, and they couldn't believe what those 12 breakaway clubs had done. They thought that there was no chance that this was going to work, and they didn't understand why they wanted to push it this far. So back to that initial question, Christoph, do you think that Bayern and Dortmund, because of the way that they're structured and because of their concern for the Bundesliga on the whole, will hold steady in their reluctance to join? Because they haven't said no, they just haven't said yes yet. I think that's a difference.
Mm. Yeah.
Or will this all change and will Bayern and Dortmund say, you know what, yeah, we don't like it, but 400 million euros guaranteed if we sign, you know, we kind of can use the money and we'll find a way then to make it work.
I think the opposition in Germany towards this kind of stuff is stronger than in other big European football league or country. I mean, that we have discussed here the specialties of German football with having this 50 plus one, how complicated and illogical it is to a certain extent here and there. My feeling is that the Bayern and Borussia Dortmund would make themselves kind of outlaws of German football when they do this. And I think it would be, I mean, especially at Borussia Dortmund, fans would hate it if they would do it. And that would also, I mean, clubs also think of their brand identity and stuff like this. And I think that would harm the brand of Borussia Dortmund and Bayern. But maybe there is so much on the table for them that they think, yeah, maybe we find a way around it, and people still like us, although we're in there. And also, I'm not convinced that this Super League really will work. I'm impressed by clubs like Arsenal. Can I refer to them as a mid-table team from England? Or
I think you can.
Or Tottenham, a club that I don't know. I mean, they haven't won anything in decades, or maybe the odd League Cup or so, to be members of the Super League. I find it so strange. It's distorting every idea of what sport is about. I share the disgust that a lot of people in football have shown within the last 24 hours. It's deeply frustrating, and also in the context of this pandemic where everybody is living in now, to come up with this concept that is fueled mainly by greed, I can't say it otherwise, I wouldn't say it destroys football or so, because in a way football is indestructible, but the risk is so much bigger than the gain. That's what I would think. Let's see how crazy they are.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still hopeful that it won't come to this, but this has been the most precarious situation I think that football as we know it has been in, because if this goes through, then the knock-on effects for everything are huge and potentially very, very destructive. So a momentous day, not just because of Hansi Flick's announcement, but also the Super League coming. These things tend to come in two and threes, as does the Steilkast, because we're back on Thursday after the Englische Woche round of midweek matches, and then we'll come back on Monday for the regular version as well. So do tune in. We'll have some news of the games and, I guess, of the political developments as well by then. Take care, all the best, and see you then. Bye.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.